Welcome to episode 19 of the Rural College Student Experience. We're doing something new with this episode. We're doing our first school spotlight, and it's on Washington University. With these episodes, what I'm trying to do is really put the spotlight on institutions that are doing something particularly amazing or particularly effective for rural student recruitment, success, persistence, whatever it might be, but where the school itself is doing something really unique and exciting. That's what these spotlight episodes are going to be about. So we're starting with Washington University. And in full disclosure, I worked at WashU for about 7.5 years in the School of Social Work. So it's really great to see one of my former places of employment on the cutting edge of serving rural students. So what we're going to talk about today is some of the things that Washington University is doing currently, some of their future plans, and how they're a part of a broader network of colleges and universities that are serving rural students very intentionally. And we're going to get to all of that in the episode. My co-host on this special spotlight episode is Mallory Goodwin. She's a rising sophomore at Washington University. Mallory is from Waynesville, Missouri, which is a close-knit military community about 2.5 hours away from Washington University. Mallory talks about growing up in a military family and having an older sister who blazed the trail for her as first-generation students. Her sister actually attended Washington University as well, so she gets into that and how that changes her perspective and her experience in college. Mallory is majoring in psychology and minoring in legal studies. After she graduates, she's planning to go to law school to further her education and pursue a career in law. In addition to going to school, Mallory loves to volunteer around campus and in the St. Louis community, as well as competing with WashU debate. So she's a very, very busy student, and she has tons to talk about actually being involved in the rural recruitment work herself as a student. It's an amazing insight into what universities and colleges can be doing to better serve their students. Our guest today is Dakota Scarlett. He's the Associate Director for Rural Recruitment at Washington University. He and Mallory work closely on a number of rural student initiatives, so it's really great to hear their back and forth on what the university is doing. Dakota discusses WashU's Heartland Initiative, which is their new program to attract more rural students from the Missouri and Illinois area, as well as the university's involvement in the STARS College Network. Now, I'll include a link to the STARS College Network in the show notes because it is an incredible initiative that's bringing together, I believe, 15 or 20 schools around the country, really focusing on rural student recruitment and success. So if you're interested in learning more beyond just Washington University, what they're doing, I'll have that link so you can learn more about the STARS College Network. Okay, Mallory, thank you so much for joining me on the Rural College Student Experience.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm really excited to talk to you today. To get us started, tell us about your background and your community where you grew up.
Yeah, so I'm from Waynesville, Missouri, which is sort of a neighboring adjoining town to Fort Leonard, Missouri. Fort Leonard is a military base. So there are two different zip codes technically, but for all intents and purposes, they really are sort of one and the same. And I sort of use them interchangeably. It's a really close-knit community, has a really large emphasis on military life. Almost everybody that lives here is either retired or active duty military. And that's how my family ended up here too. My dad just retired and he got out and now we're here. I am really close with my family, and I have an older sister who goes to WashU and has been such a blessing throughout this, like my entire college journey. I genuinely don't think that I would be the person that I am today without her. And so I'm sure we'll talk more about her later on and how she's helped me through this process. I'm a rising junior. I almost said first year. I'm not a first year anymore. I just said junior. I'm a rising sophomore. WashU.
That's okay. It's exciting. You're in college and it's exciting. That's what matters.
Yeah, I'm in college. It's exciting. I go to WashU. I'm planning on going to law school after undergrad. And I'm minoring in legal studies and planning on majoring in psychology. And I'm so excited for how my first year just went. And I can't wait to get back to school and get back to it for the next year.
Well, congratulations on completing a first year successfully. And that's amazing that you want to go to law school. Do you have a specific area of law or type of law you hope to practice?
Not particularly. I definitely have areas of law that I'm interested in, but I don't know if I could really narrow it down and say that there's one area of law that I'm super dedicated to at this point in time. Constitutional law is really interesting to me, and I took a Beyond Boundaries class at WashU taught by a prof from WashU Law, and it focused on religious freedom in America and what the legal landscape of that looks like. And that class was totally fascinating. I would recommend it to anyone who's interested in law or history.
Yeah, very interesting.
I also think that, like, law could be really cool. So there are lots of options and lots of possibilities, and I'm really looking forward to spending the next couple of years and even after that up into law school, figuring out what area I'd like to specialize in.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad you're taking the time to actually take advantage of the college experience and explore those things and not say, I know I'm going to do this, and this, because so often that's what we tell students is you have to come to college with your plan in place. But you're taking the track of, I know I'm going to go to law school, you know, and that's great for now. And I think it's a great lesson for other students who are listening to learn that you don't have to have your entire plan or life planned out when you start college.
Yes, I think that's so important. I think that just in general, there's lots of pressure to have everything figured out when you go to college and have like a spreadsheet of all the classes you're going to take within the next 4 years. But I mean, more often than not, that's just not how it works out. You know, life throws you curveballs, and I think it's really important to be flexible and to be comfortable, maybe not knowing everything about how things are going to turn out for you.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a beautiful way to put it. So I want to go back and talk about your path to college and what that was like, because you're in such an interesting position where you had an older sister who's blazing the trail for you, not only in college, but at the same university. But then you mentioned that pull towards the military because so many people in your community and your family have gone that path. So what was that decision like? How did you end up at WashU?
I think that it was definitely a long road. That's the way that I would describe it. Getting to WashU and figuring out that it was the school for me and where I wanted to spend the next 4 years. I kind of grew up with an understanding that whatever I was going to do, I probably needed to go to college for it. Just like anybody else, there were lots of different fields that I was interested in. And it took me a considerable amount of time to really make up my mind and say that I thought that being a lawyer was what life would look like for me when all was said and done. But even throughout all of the different careers that I'd kind of played around with and thought about and looked into, I always knew that I was going to need to go to college. Which is not necessarily unusual where I'm from. We do send a considerable number of students to school, we send a considerable number of students on to undergrad after high school. But it is also where I'm from, pretty typical to expect that in a family or in a social circle, there's going to be like a good number of people who do end up enlisting in the military or doing both. Going enlisting in the military and also going to school at the same time. I knew pretty early on that was just not a path that I was interested in. My sister considered it for a while. And so I kind of got to see the decision-making processes that she took to get through there. But I knew that I always really wanted to go on into higher ed. From there, it was just figuring out what school, which I think was probably one of the most stressful experiences of my life. I'm sure that anybody who has recently gone through an application cycle or is preparing for one understands what I'm talking about. The level of anxiety that I felt about which school I was going to go to, which schools I was going to apply to or get into, what resources they would have for me, whether or not that would be a good fit for me long term or have the things that I wanted them to have in terms of like majors and minors and career opportunities. It was all a lot. And I think that's really an area that my older sister sort of took me under her wing and helped walk me through, because she'd just gone through that process. She's 5 years older than me. So when I was applying to colleges my senior year, she had just committed to WashU Med. And so she was really, really familiar, having just gone through her med school cycle as well. And she was just such a resource for me, I think probably beyond anybody else. When it came to talking to me about things like what she would recommend, what she wouldn't, in terms of like what to put in an application, which schools to consider applying to in the first place. And I also just think that she is the person that put WashU on my radar. When she committed to WashU, I was in sixth grade. And so I really hadn't done a whole bunch in the ways of like college searching and like understanding which schools
weren't really
I would be thinking about it. Yeah, I was not thinking about it. It was not on my mind at all. At least not seriously.
Right.
And so she was the first person that like I knew who went to WashU or that I had heard talk about it in conversation. And then we spent the next 4 years going up to St. Louis, seeing her, spending the day with her and hearing about her talk about it when she came home on break. And the more and more that I would hear her talk about it and the closer that I got with her, the more I thought that this school could be a good fit for me. I think having someone with like an insider perspective into the school was really, really valuable because I could get something that was really like I could get a perspective on the school that was really candid and based off of someone's lived experience, which I think is so impactful and so much more than you'll ever get from just like doing a Google search on a school or even going something with more like depth as to like go on a tour of the school. I was talking to someone who was a student there, who'd lived it, who'd graduated from there and could say that they'd had the whole experience. And so I thought that was super valuable. And she just had such wonderful things to say about the school. And between that and the fact that it was close to home and it had good programs and basically anything that I could think of, I thought that it would be a good fit for me. So I applied early decision and I got in. And that was how I ended up where I am.
Wow, that is such a it's such a wonderful path. And again, I love that you had your sister there to guide and mentor you, because as you were saying a few minutes ago, there are so many unknowns in the process and so many questions and not knowing your way around campus, what classes to take, who to talk to. And so you having that, I think it is so, so helpful. But I want to actually take a turn and go to what you and I were talking about right before we started recording, was what you're doing this summer with the admissions office, because it's so in line with you kind of paying it forward for what your sister did to you, did for you. So can you talk about what you're going to be doing this summer with the admissions office?
Yes, of course, I would love to. So I, this summer, am going to be working as a role peer ambassador for WashU's inaugural Role Scholars Academy, which is basically sort of like a summer camp for rising high school juniors. So they're at that age where they're probably like taking their ACT, they're thinking about what schools to apply to, they're really preparing for their oncoming application cycle. They have opportunities to take like college classes, they live on campus for about a week, and they get to talk to admissions officers, financial aid counselors, basically everybody that you could think of that would have a hand in college life. They get a chance to talk to them, spend time with them, to get to know them, and to get to know campus. And myself and my other role peer ambassadors kind of are there just to sort of walk them through the process, be a guide for them in whatever they need to be, both in terms of what's happening directly on campus, like getting them from place to place, and also in a more general sense, like if they're stressed a little bit about their application process and they want someone to vent to about that, we are totally there for that. Or if they have any questions about what it's like to be a student at WashU right now, those are questions that we can field too. Generally just there to give rural students who oftentimes don't have the same access to go on college tours or things of that nature, sometimes just due to distance alone, an opportunity to get to see what higher ed is like and what higher ed is like at WashU. And I couldn't be more excited. And if I could do anything like what my sister did for me and alleviate some of that anxiety or try to clear up any of those like big lingering questions that you have when you're applying to your college application cycle, I would just love to be able to do that for them.
Well, I have no doubt you're going to be able to, because it sounds like you're there to answer those exact questions and address those exact same concerns that your sister did for you a few years ago. And that's such a great program. And for students who are listening, I really encourage you to, for any colleges you're considering, you're applying to, or that you're at currently, go out and find out if they have rural mentorship programs, rural student organizations, rural scholarships, just anything. More institutions are finally taking a proactive approach.
You're cutting out again.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, okay. There you are.
So Mallory, now I want to switch and talk a little bit about more objectively what you've seen as barriers to entry or success for rural students. As a rural student, someone who's come from a small town, what are the barriers you've seen in that other rural students, yourself, your sister might have faced on the journey to college or in college just because of their background and their identity?
That is definitely a really complex question, but I would love to speak on it. One thing that I think I would say the best way that I could describe the barriers that I'm experiencing or that I've seen other people experience, like in the aggregate, would be the idea that in my experience, it seems like the like average student, so to say, that like colleges or the university that I attend seems to have in mind is not a rural student. So at WashU, we have a really large population of students from really heavily populated metropolitan areas. Lots of my best friends are from really large cities like New York, San Francisco, and LA. And it's been really wonderful getting to meet lots of people from lots of really big places like that, that have like different experiences. And that's been really, really cool. At the same time, I think that it also sort of skews the perception of the university to think that that, because that is like the majority of the student population or such a large portion of the student population, that that is like the primary student they should cater to. One of my like earliest memories of my like rurality being really salient to me was one of the trips that we went on. As like, it was one of our like first year like excursions in St. Louis, which was a really cool experience. And it's really cool that the university does things like this for us. We got to go to a Cardinals game and it was like totally free. The university just wanted to like get us off campus and try to get us to like bond with each other and sort of de-stress during welcome week. And we took the metro and it was like daunting for me because we don't really even have like taxis or like Ubers where I'm from. And the small town that I'm from is not even like that small in the grand scheme of things. Like I know people who are from towns that have populations of like less than 100 people and even smaller than that. So like for me, it really puts it in perspective. And I remember being on the metro and like not actually knowing how to like stand up on the metro because it was like standing room only. And I was like, and one of my best friends who is from New York was handling it like a pro. And I was like, we come from such different worlds. And especially at university where first years are not allowed to have cars. There is sort of like the narrative that's communicated is that, you know, you can't have a car, but there are options for public transportation that are in place. Like WashU students are given a metro pass. And you also, there are like university shuttles that go around campus and go around nearby locations like the Loop that can get you from place to place. But for that to take place, you have to be able and comfortable to navigate like public transportation systems, which if you've grown up navigating public transportation systems your whole life, then that's like pretty simple, especially since the St. Louis public transportation system is not all that complex. But for someone who is from a system with genuinely no public transportation system at all, that really doesn't seem comparable to having your own vehicle when you've like grown up driving and like you've known that that's always going to be something that like you would do and you would rely on.
It makes me so happy you brought up that example, because I've used that exact example in my professional work so many times over the years. Having worked at WashU, I thought the same thing. I'm like, it's great in theory that you're giving these students free public transit. That's terrific. But how many are actually taking advantage of it? Just like you said, the daunting nature of it, not knowing how, maybe feeling unsafe, not knowing even where to begin. I'm so glad you said that, because that's one of those things that universities, and this isn't just Washington University, but institutions are doing where they're thinking they're doing something great for the students. And on the surface, it really is. But the underlying assumption is everyone grew up with public transportation. So I'm really glad you touched on that. Other examples or other ways your rural identity has impacted your experience, again, either in the application process, the lead up to college, or now that you've been in college?
Yeah, I would love to go more into detail on some other examples. In terms of the application process, that's one thing that I would also really love to talk about, because for me, my application process was such a journey. And now it's something that, working with Phil and Dakota and working with the Rural Scholars Program, it's something that I'm starting to see more of like the back end of, and like just see a different perspective of. In my hometown is a military community. So it's a military community, and we also have a really big influence in like the agricultural community and in like trade schools and things like that. So we have my high school is right next to a career center. So it was like completely normal for students to take like 2 or 3 hours out of their school day to go learn a trade at the Career Center and to graduate with like a degree in a particular trade when they graduated high school. So we were like, my high school was set up with lots of opportunities in like agricultural fields, in different trade sects and things of that nature. Definitely with lots of influence in the Army, our JRTC program was outstanding at my high school. And we had lots of connections with the actual ROTC program at our military base. That was like 10 minutes away from my high school. We didn't have a ton of connections with like four-year universities though. And that was something that was made really clear to me when I was applying. It seemed like common knowledge, just like going through my high school, walking through the halls of like how to get into West Point. And we did send a considerable number of students to West Point or to the U.S. Naval Academy every year. It was not at all common knowledge. And it seemed almost like something sort of like mystic or magical or something that you would like pray about to get into like an Ivy League or like a top 20 school or even like any four-year university. Like it was just something that was always seemed like a little bit out of reach at my high school, to the extent that like when I told people like, oh, I was going to WashU, the reaction skewed anywhere from like, wow, oh my goodness, like I can't believe it, congratulations, to like, what even is that? Like, where is that when it's like 2 hours away from us? And I think that part of that is because of like the community that I come from. The emphasis in my community is not on a four-year education, which is fine. And that's not for everybody. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I also think that part of it is because of the way that the university markets, which is those are some conversations that I've had with Phil and Dakota, where they've been quite candid with me. And they've said that the university is trying to make steps to get better at that. And I have seen them like take steps to get better at that. And I've heard feedback about that from people in my hometown, that now they are starting to market more towards like rural areas in my hometown itself. But like when I was graduating high school and like when my sister was going through high school, there was like never a point in time where we like at one of our like college and career fairs had like WashU have a booth set up where they would like come talk to us about like what the university was like or things like that. That was just like we were just it felt like we were just like not a school that was like on their radar at all. And so to us, it felt like we in turn were not students that were on their radar. And so that combined with the fact that we like coming from a community where four-year universities were not really heavily emphasized in comparison to going to a trade school or joining the military, it felt like the whole college admissions process was a little bit really confusing, quite frankly. And was very mystifying and something that you kind of just crossed your fingers for. And that I remember was something that filled me with a lot of anxiety, because it was like by the time that I was applying for colleges, there were all of these terms being thrown out that I had no idea what they meant. And I was like looking up all of these statistics online and all of these like little calculators about like, what are the chances that you get into X school? And they were using metrics that I had like no idea where they were coming from. And it just felt a lot like everybody was playing off of a rule book that I was just never given. And that I was really kind of going at it on my own with the resources that I had, which I am really grateful for the resources that I had. And having an older sister going through it just a couple years before I did, I know gave me an immense leg up in the process. And I can't understate enough how grateful I am for that. But I do think that in comparison to my college admissions process, there is a lot of room to grow. And I'm glad to see the university take steps to really show rural students like myself that they are thinking about them, that they are interested in them, that they are catering to them.
No, I think that's wonderful. And you are not alone. Your story, as I was listening, it's so interesting, because it's like, I've heard that story so many times, or I've read that story so many times, all of those pieces of it's confusing. There's terminology I've never heard of before. They don't come to our schools to recruit. It's like, and for other students, current or future students who are listening to this, these rural stories are so common, because that is sort of the system we have set up. Our higher education system really has been skewed historically towards metro, urban, suburban areas. So yeah, Mallory, everything you're saying is so common across the country, not just in Missouri, because institutions have, it's a lot of recruitment-driven enrollment, enrollment-driven recruitment. And so they have to go where the students are. And a lot of times students aren't out at Fort Leonardwood, right? And other similar places. So I really appreciate you talking about that because hopefully, again, other students who are listening, your stories are not unique. You know, everyone is going through this who comes from these rural spaces, and that's on the institutions. That's on the schools to fix that, not on the students. And so with that in mind, I want to go to kind of our last question. I would love to hear from you. What do you think school leaders need to know? You know, if you had every college president, every, you know, education legislator in a room, every chancellor, every faculty member in a room, what does higher education need to know about rural students? What's one or two things you would tell them?
That's a great question. The first thing that I would tell them is that rural students, or in general, people from rural communities, are not a monolith. There is immense diversity within rural communities, along with the similarity that people from rural and small towns, rural communities and small towns, have in the fact that they are from communities that do have smaller populations. One narrative that I've heard as I've gone out into like this larger area as I've been in college, not as much from like faculty necessarily, but more from students, is this idea that like somebody from a rural area or a small town, or rural areas or small towns themselves, all like look, act, or think in a particular way. And I think that that narrative in and of itself leads to a lack of conversation and leads to a lack of progression within rural communities and outside of them as well, within more urban, suburban, or metropolitan areas. And I think that when you're catering as faculty or as administrators to real students and trying to understand what it is that they need, you have to first and foremost understand that they're all going to need things that are different. I was fortunate enough to go to a school that, in large part due to the fact that we received a great deal of federal funding from our connections to the military base, had a decent number of AP classes that you could take. But I have heard from some of my fellow rural students that that was not the case for them, and that there were no AP, IB, or honors classes that were available to them at all. And so going to a school like WashU, where it's sort of expected, especially if you're going into like a STEM profession or if you're pre-med, that you walk in having taken at least like AP Calc in high school, that sets you up as a rural student who may or may not have had that opportunity to take an AP class like that in high school at a really immense disadvantage from the get-go. Especially when you take into account the fact that just because the classes are offered does not necessarily mean that the school that you go to has the population to sustain them. It was not at all uncommon for me to take AP classes in high school that had class sizes of like 4 or 5 students. And it was completely common for when you registered for an AP class for the teacher to be there to teach it. But if the interest in the class that year based on the student population like was or wasn't present, the class may or may not be taught in the fall. And that was just a gamble that you took when you took the class. And so I think that if our faculty who are teaching these courses and who are overseeing these courses and overseeing the university as a whole can understand that every rural student is coming from a different background, regardless of their rurality, and that their rurality will have impacted them differently. I'm a rural student and I live on a military base. Like some people don't have that, and some people have things about their rurality that make them completely different from me. I think that that will help them to understand that in catering to people's rurality, they have to first acknowledge their differences. And then the second thing that I would want to make sure that administrators know about rural students would be that it is true that being from a rural area or a small town comes with its own set of disadvantages, due to the fact that coming from a rural area or small town means almost by definition that you lack resources that others have. However, it also comes with a great deal of advantages. And I feel like a lot of the time conversations about rurality have sort of a general narrative that rurality is something that you have to persevere through or something that you have to overcome. And it ignores the idea that your reality is something that is inherent to who you are because it's something that you've grown up with. And it ignores the fact that it's a part of your identity, and it puts down that part of your identity. And it ignores the fact that that part of your identity is something that you bring to the table. It is true that at my high school, there may or may not have been enough teachers to teach a particular class in a particular year. And there may or may not have been enough students to take that class in a particular year. However, I had bonds with my teachers and with my fellow students that came from knowing them for years, being able to talk with them and have one-on-one conversations in a classroom where there were only 5 students in a class. Having these teachers have watched me grow up or taught me, teach me for 5 years in high school, 4 years in high school, excuse me. Know my family, have taught my sister, have worked with my mom, go to church with me, see me at the grocery store, develop these relationships with my teachers, with my peers, and with my community members, even outside of an educational standpoint, that filled me with so much confidence being surrounded in an area where I knew that I was consistently loved and supported, that I genuinely do think aided me in my college transition, aided me in choosing the college that I went to, and is going to continue to aid me in my journey through law school and my journey as a lawyer afterwards. And I think that if we continue to frame morality as something that, yes, does have its drawbacks, but also has its benefits, just like anything else, quite frankly, we can have a more nuanced conversation about it and stop viewing morality as this thing that we have to get through, because I don't think that's really helpful to anyone, because quite frankly, most of the country is rural geographically. It's not something that we're going to or should get rid of.
Mallory, so many amazing thoughts there. And especially the two main things are rural is not a monolith. The rural people are not a monolith. One of the things we say over and over and over on this podcast, but also the second piece of not being ashamed of rural backgrounds, not seeing rural backgrounds just from a deficit perspective, but seeing the strengths, the benefits, the advantages, just so many amazing things in your summary there. So thank you so much, Mallory, for being part of this podcast today. We are going to take a short break, and then we will be back with our guest, Dakota Scarlett. Dakota, thank you so much for joining us on this episode today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So let's start off. Tell us about Washington University's Heartland Initiative. What is that and what is the purpose?
Yeah, so WashU's Heartland Initiative is one of two rural recruitment initiatives we have brought to campus in the past year. So the Heartland Initiative was our first. One of our WashU alum and a former board of trustee member, Joyce Buckheit, gave us some money for what's called the Heartland Initiative, and it is to increase rural student application and enrollment at WashU from rural communities in the WashU Pledge region. So the WashU Pledge region is all of Missouri and the southern half of Illinois. And so our job is to myself, my team member as well, and then through communications, travel, going to local high schools, going to college fairs, we're hoping to kind of increase college access to places like WashU in Missouri in the southern half of Illinois. And part of the Heartland Initiative is a really cool new program that we're actually launching in less than a month called the WashU Rural Scholars Academy, where we are bringing 25 rising high school juniors from rural communities in Missouri and Illinois to campus for a week-long residential pre-college program. So those students will be on campus for a week. They will get to do an 8-hour class. They will participate in college admission seminars, do social activities, a Cardinals game, St. Louis Zoo, Forest Park. And then they will also have a chance to interact with some current WashU students. So we've hired some rural peer ambassadors. Our co-host today, Mallory, is one of our rural peer ambassadors who have been hired to help kind of be that face and that mentor and kind of that guide to these rural students who have done this, right? So Mallory and the other four RPAs have all come to WashU from these rural communities and navigated this really exciting, but also at times challenging college admissions process and journey, and they have made it to WashU. And so they're now going to be able to share their insight and share their feedback and share their wisdom in a more peer-to-peer capacity that I and my team just can't do with being full-time staff.
Yeah, and Mallory did a great job earlier telling us about what she's going to be doing, her work, and you couldn't have picked a better candidate, so that's fantastic. And so before Mallory jumps in, and I know she has questions to ask, I want to back up. What did you use, and this is more to educate other practitioners, faculty who might be listening, how did you decide on those activities, the peer-to-peer piece, the college class piece, the going to the Cardinal? How did you decide on those? What did you use as sort of your research or your basis?
Yeah, so I'm actually about to start writing my dissertation the assets that rural students bring with them to college campuses, right? A lot of rural communities talk about a lot of university administrators, a lot of suburban, urban scholars talk about rural communities from a deficit lens. And so we want to use asset-based lens. And so my dissertation will actually be centering the work of Yasso's cultural wealth model. And so for me, Yasso has this belief that every culture, every community brings their own assets and own strengths to a new environment. So cultural capital, social capital, but also like aspirational capital, also linguistic capital, right? So for instance, you can't just say, oh, all rural students can be served by a different office that serves all first-gen students or all low-income students. Obviously, one, rural communities aren't monoliths. Not every rural student is first-gen. Not every rural student is low-income. But rural students have their unique needs. So I was actually telling someone this yesterday. It's kind of fun and cool right now for suburban people and those of us in suburbia to say like the word folks, like, hi, folks. That's kind of cool and hip right now, but actually rural communities have been saying that forever. Like rural people say folks, F-O-L-K-S, to replace guys and y'all all the time. And so like a lot of rural students say the word folks. And when I was in college, that was like a weird thing. You knew that I was from a rural community because I said the word folks. Whereas now I think Mallory's generation more has embraced that. But I think like if for a lot of those linguistic things, those cultural things that are unique to being a rural student. Another example is community. Rural students coming from small towns are really community minded, and they love to be in small, tight knit friend groups, social groups, et cetera. And so for us, we wanted to figure out what are the different things that rural students need to be successful when they're applying for college. Obviously, things like understanding the college admissions process. So that's why some of our advising seminars will be around Financial Aid 101. We'll have an entire session on how to navigate the different parts of an application, not just the essay, which is what most schools focus on. But we're also going to go further. How do you read a transcript? How do you pick between an AP or an IB class if your school offers those? How do you ask for a letter of recommendation? And then we're also going to discuss how to start a college search. Because remember, these are rising juniors. And so a lot of them might not have started their college search process yet. So what do you look for between a state school and a private school? What do you look for between a highly selective or a flagship public university? And then the social activity piece and the rural peer ambassador piece is, again, back to Yasso's cultural wealth model of these students need people that are like them. I can't just hire an urban student at WashU from an urban environment and say, hey, connect with these rural peers, with these rural students. Mallory and her peers who are from these rural communities can speak their language, literally speak their language, know their life story, and know all the challenges and also all the great things they've experienced being in rural America better than a suburban or an urban WashU student could. And so we just utilized research and utilized what the best practices are out there by some of the scholars in the field who have done the research on this and utilize that to kind of build our learning outcomes for the program. And then from there, build out the individual programs and sessions.
That was really, really great stuff, Dakota. And it was really cool for me as someone who's working under you and working as part of this program to see all the thought that's gone into it. And I know that Matt and I were just talking about focusing on rurality through an asset-based lens earlier. So it was really cool to hear that from you. So kind of with that, and talking about all the things that WashU is doing with the Heartland Initiative, stepping away from that a little bit, can you tell me about the STARS program and what WashU is doing with that?
Yeah, thanks, Mallory. So as I mentioned, the Heartland Initiative is more regional focused. I like to say it's kind of WashU doing rural efforts in our backyard, so Missouri and Illinois. The STARS Network, STARS stands for Small Town and Rural Students College Network, is bigger. It's nationwide. It's actually a consortium of 16 elite universities across the country working together to increase college access. So some of those schools, obviously WashU, also Colby College in Maine, University of Iowa, Northwestern University, University of Chicago, Vanderbilt University, Yale University is part of the network. So a list, a mixture of public state schools, Ivies and highly selective universities have come together to increase rural student access, rural student college access. And the cool thing about this STARS network is that that's our goal. We want to increase rural college student access. We don't really necessarily need to say that all of our schools have to increase rural students by 5% at our individual school. As long as we're increasing the amount of students going to places like WashU or Yale or Caltech or USC in California. That's our end goal, and that's what we're striving for. And so part of the STARS network is when we kind of share resources, share best practices. Matt's talked on this podcast before about how hard it is to actually define rural, and defining rurality can be very hard. Mallory, I know we had a whole training about this back in the spring. But you know, one of my team members, Phil, is actually leading the STARS network working group. Him and actually one of Matt's prior guests, Corinne Smith from Yale, are co-leading that defining rural working group, because no one's defined rural. And Yale and Phil here at WashU and Corinne at Yale have created a great model for how to actually define rural that every school in the country could literally just implement on their campuses. And so through the resources of the STARS network, we're able to kind of share best practices and share ways of doing things that maybe other schools haven't thought of, like defining rural. Beyond that, though, it also is a great way to have provide opportunities for students to come to college campuses. So every one of those 16 schools does some sort of fly-in program for rural students. So it might be like our WashU Rural Scholars Academy that is only for rural students. It might be where they provide a few spots just for rural students for other more general fly-in programs. But all 16 of these schools are doing some sort of fly-in program annually for rural students. We also have this really cool, we've partnered with Schoolhouse World, which is a really cool online learning platform that lets students who maybe don't have access to, Mallory, you're from a rural community like I am, so you understand this. Not every high school offers AP calculus, right? And so for a lot of elite or Ivy institutions to get into some of their programs, pre-health, engineering, they require calculus. And so through schoolhouse.world, we're able to let students take an online course and online lessons through an online tutor and have that course online count towards meeting that requirement. That course won't come in as an actual credit course. It won't be that your high school probably wouldn't count that towards your high school requirements, and we wouldn't actually count that as an actual course. But if you took the AP calculus option on Schoolhouse World, we would then see it as meeting that AP calc requirement. And all 16 STARS schools have committed to doing that. So Schoolhouse.world works mostly with like math and STEM, but they even have some foreign language classes and some writing classes. So especially for a lot of the rural schools that don't have the access or the resources to some of those higher level classes, a lot of these highly selective universities look for, the Schoolhouse World lets you now take that and take those courses online, maybe summer before senior year of high school, or even after senior year of high school before you come and start college or first year, and lets that course count towards meeting the requirements we have for admission into our university. And then all STARS schools, Mallory, are also just doing a lot of outreach to counselors as well. You know, as you know, a lot of times in these rural communities, the only social capital that you have someone who's gone to college, for a lot of our first gen students, is your counselor, right? And so maybe you're the first in your family and the first in your friend group to have a sibling go to college. And so no one can really tell you what to expect or what to experience. And so we're trying to really help our rural high school counselors just understand some of the nuances of applying to college, but especially at a highly selective. So for example, most of our STARS partners, STARS schools, use what's called a CSS profile. I know you're familiar with that, both Matt and Mallory, but you know, the FAFSA lets you get federal aid. So work study, loans, federal grants, et cetera. But a lot of highly selective and elite universities also can provide institutional aid because we are privileged and wealthy enough to be able to provide institutional aid for a lot of our students, but we require the CSS profile. But in Missouri, the only school that requires a CSS profile is WashU. So a lot of our small town and rural counselors are like, what is a CSS profile? These parents are asking questions. I'm not sure how to answer it. And so the STARS network is leveraging the human power at our schools to also help increase knowledge and opportunity for rural counselors, knowing that they're honestly in a lot of these rural communities, the only lifeline these really achieving and brilliant and hardworking rural students have to get into a place like WashU.
That all sounds great. And that was just a wealth of information about the STARS network. And I know I'm already a little bit familiar with it from some of the trainings that we've done and some of the interactions we've had with it, but I feel like I got to learn more. So I'm so glad that everyone who's listening gets to learn more about it too. So moving forward from that, just I guess stepping out again into a more general sense, outside of the STARS network or the Heartland Initiative, how else is WashU ensuring that rural students feel a sense of belonging and that sense of community that we talked about being so important on campus?
Yeah, I love that question. I've been in my admissions role for a year, but I spent 7 years before that I was in student affairs. So in first year programming, so sense of belonging is like my second language. So I know it very well. So I would say first off, one, I think before students even arrive on campus, our rural peer ambassadors are so important because talking to a lot of our partner schools in the STARS network, we're one of the first of the 16 schools to actually have an actual like rural focus and rural specific student leadership program for prospective and incoming rural students. And that's so huge because to know, I want to go to WashU, I'm applying to WashU, and there's actually someone there from a small town, whether 5 minutes from my home small town or across the country, but similar to my small town, has one flashing four-way stoplight, has one gas station, or the stereotype, more cows than people, right? Understanding that someone else like you has navigated the admissions process and made it to a place like WashU is so crucial to seeing yourself and finding that representation. So that's number one, I would say. Number two is that we do a really good job of supporting all of our first-gen and low-income students. And I want to give the caveat again that not all rural students are first-gen and low-income. But for those that are, we just got a $15 million gift to establish the Taylor Family Center for Student Success. And so that office is really dedicated to helping first-gen and low-income students by finding older students who are mentors at WashU, help them with strengthening their social and career networks, finding internships, developing financial literacy, all these things that first-gen low-income students have less access to in high school. We're helping them get that access now in college. And so we've always had that office, but it's now expanding with this huge $15 million gift. It's going to be a really huge asset and resource for all of our first-gen and low-income students, rural or not rural. And I'll say the third thing, Mallory, is that we are doing some diligent work right now across campus to really kind of create a network and knowing who on campus staff faculty wise is from a rural background and who is not. So my colleague Phil is actually working right now on creating a list of who all across campus identifies as rural. What faculty in the business school? What faculty in the art school? What staff and student affairs and admissions identify as rural? And let's find those staff members, create a list of them, and have them as potential mentors, whether formally or informally, for rural students coming in. Because again, you might make your best friend at WashU might be in the same major as you, might be some your roommate. But if your roommate is from a suburban or urban environment and does not understand why you want to go walk at Forest Park every day because you miss nature, you miss being outside, doesn't understand why you're still so close with your high school friends, because I mean, we had, all of us in rural America had the same high school friends from literally kindergarten all the way through high school because we were all in the same school district our entire educational experience. And so knowing that there's someone like you, whether they're a peer, like an RPA, like Mallory, like you are Mallory, or faculty or staff member who can just relate to your experience, relate to what it's like to be from a rural background. Again, the positives and the assets of you know, the hard work, the your hard work ethic, your ability to navigate different environments, your ability to create community anywhere that you are. Those are all assets of being a rural student. But there also are some challenges that rural students face at a place like WashU. The biggest one is imposter syndrome, right? As a staff member who's a public school graduate my entire life, kindergarten through grad school, coming to a place like WashU is super intimidating, right? And so knowing that I can help my current students, my RPAs, my other rural students see that, hey, I am from, you know, my mom actually is from a town 5 minutes from where Mallory is from. And so knowing that my small town is very similar in size to Mallory's, I'm here as well. I am thriving. I got my degree. I'm working, giving back to at a place like WashU. You can as well. It's super important. So to be honest, Mallory, we have some work to do. I think every campus has some work to do to really help our rural students find a sense of belonging. However, I think WashU is on the right track and is, to be honest, ahead of the game of a lot of other schools in helping our rural students not just get into WashU, but to also thrive and find a sense of belonging and to really enjoy and make the most of their 4 or 5 years on campus.
Thank you, Dakota. That was fantastic. And I agree. It sounds like WashU is not only leading the way in a lot of ways, but taking it very seriously and trying to get multiple paths forward. So thank you for sharing all of that. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have on this podcast. And I know we could talk so much more because there's so much more interesting stuff that the three of us could get into. But thank you so much for sharing about what WashU is doing. Thank you for the work you're doing. You're leading up there. And please share our thanks from the podcast to everyone on your team. I think that's amazing. Thank you for being our guest today. Mallory, thank you so much for being my co-host today. You did an amazing job. I really just appreciate and value your opinion and insights so much. So I appreciate both of you being here with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And thank you everyone for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you haven't already, make sure you are subscribed to the Rural College Student Experience wherever you get your podcast so that you get an update when we have a new episode for you to download. Please also be sure to follow us on Twitter at RCSEPOD. You can also follow me at Dr. Matt Newman. Thank you so much for listening. We'll have a new episode in just a couple of weeks. Have a great rest of your day.